Hot Business is powered by Standard Bank Business and Commercial Banking, delivering expert support and tailored solutions to help your business grow with confidence, clarity, and resilience.
Now, this is an interesting one. From TikTok therapists to YouTuber sports drinks, I think we're living in an age of what is termed egonomics, where fame is currency and the loudest voice often trumps the best idea. Now, well-known branding expert Mike Abel argues that we've entered a marketplace where personality is replacing product and attention has become the most traded asset of all. But is egonomics a new paradigm or just another branding buzzword? And if it's all smoke and selfies, what happens when the algorithm turns? Joining me now is Mike Abel. He is from the M&C Saatchi Group. Mike, a very warm welcome. And this is interesting. You say attention is currency. I understand that. But hasn't that always been true? Isn't egonomics just a new label for old tactics?
Thanks for having me, Jeremy, and excited to have the conversation around this. I think there are very many differences between, I guess, this age of egonomics that we enter into now, where influencers really, or famous people, have become the product itself. And the product has almost taken the background. So we're not living in a time, I guess, where people are investing in craft or in ideas or in innovation. We're investing in fame and in influence. And I think that is very different. So when you had the old days of, or still very current, I guess, of celebrity endorsement, the product itself was a good product, tried, tested from a firm, you know, whether it's a sports star wearing a pair of sneakers or whether it's somebody who's promoting an established brand. That's very different to launching, I guess, a beverage, which becomes a sensation. I mean, I remember being in London a couple of years ago, and my sons wanted to buy this drink called Prime. I'd never heard of it. And I gave them a £50 note because that's all I had in my wallet at the time.
And there was no change.
Getting very little change. And I said to the guy, I said, what's going on here? And he said, this is a very famous product. And I remember actually, you know, tasting it, and it tasted, well, to my taste buds, at least awful. But when you look at over 50% of fall off in sales last year, you know, the product itself doesn't stack up to the brand. And I think that that's what we're seeing over and over, these disproportionate payments because of the people behind the products versus the products themselves. And that, I think, is the fundamental shift here.
So, Mike, you argue that egonomic brands lack depth, but I'd come back at you and say many so-called influencer brands really do drive sales and loyalty. It's not just about the noise, is it?
Yes. Well, I think that we have to have a look at what will stand the test of time. That's always the best measure for these things. So when you look at, you know, whether or not it's a podcast host who's launching supplements, or you're looking at Kylie Jenner, who, you know, has sold, you know, 50% share in her brand to Coty, I think for $600 million, whatever. You've got to look at how those things do longer term. So one of the biggest brands still in the world and has made the owners multi-billionaires is Chanel. You know, Coco Chanel died, you know, I don't know, 50, 60 years ago at least. Chanel number 5, I think, was invented somewhere round about World War II. And it still sells an absolute fortune. You know, then you look at another brand and you say, okay, Michael, give me another example in the same category. And I could say, okay, well, let's look at Liz Taylor. Liz Taylor launched her White Diamonds brand, I think, around about 1991. By 2018, that brand had done $1.5 billion in sales. So you say, okay, well, obviously people must like the smell of White Diamonds. But then what right does a Liz Taylor have? Because she's an influencer. No, she's not. She's actually an iconic and legendary actress who had probably got 60 years of acting under her belt. She was a famous celebrity for her jewelry. So the whole thing played into the narrative, Jeremy. And today, I don't think you need any pedigree. I don't think you need any credibility. I don't think you need any history to be that. I mean, I was looking at Greta Thunberg now, just an unrelated thing just before this interview, to see what are her credentials as a climate activist, okay, because she's been nominated a number of times for a Nobel Prize for the climate. Well, she's never studied the climate. She's got no credentials, academic or otherwise, to talk about the climate other than getting cross. And in today's world, that's good enough to become a global expert. So,
Mike, yep. you single out two other brands. You talk about Hermes and Apple, and you talk about their authenticity. But don't they also trade on hype and status? So is that not just ergonomics in a suit, perhaps, just better dressed up?
Well, I think the condition of ergonomics relates to individuals and to people. So I don't think that people paid a premium for Apple because of Steve Jobs. And if you have a look at Apple's performance since Jobs passed away, it's continued to be spectacular. Hermes, well, I'm not aware of any families or celebrities behind Hermes other than it being, I guess, it started off as a great saddle brand for the equestrian industry. So you're talking about brands there that have got a real pedigree. Okay, if you look at a brand like a Prada, well, there is a lady, you know, Miuccia Prada behind it, or a Giorgio Armani, there's a Giorgio Armani behind it. But those are fashion designers who've got pedigree in that space. So yes, I think there are brands that are premium brands, like Apple is a premium brand. People are prepared to pay more for it, but you pay more for it because of the innovation and because of the quality of the product. I don't think you're paying more for something facile. I think you're paying, well, probably a 20% premium because it's a status brand, but the inherent product itself is of the quality, whereas egocentric or ergonomic-driven brands are personalities. I mean, we've just watched the showdown right now happening in the White House with, you know, Trump and Musk. That's political ergonomics. That's got nothing to do with policy at all. It's just got to do with primacy, you know, two alpha males having it out.
So, Mike, again, let me test your argument here. You go on to say that ergonomics is shallow, but I'd come back and you'd say maybe that's a bit elitist. If people are buying the story, doesn't that immediately give it value?
Yes, in the short term, it certainly does. I guess for a brand purist, and maybe I'm a bit of an anachronism in this regard, but I like to look at something to say, what is the longer term value of this? You know, a fortune of money is being spent behind creating, producing, marketing, driving this thing. There are a lot of people that are being employed by it. It's driving an economy. It's in shops. What is the implication of that thing fizzing out within a 24-month period? What does that look like for the people that are part of that whole thing or that have invested behind something like that or have bought shares in a company that has, you know, kind of risen like a rocket and then exploded in space? So I kind of look at value more from a longer-term perspective, Jeremy, than the short-term. And maybe it is an elitist mindset, and if it is, I'm comfortable with that. But I do think, you know, as I say, it creates fast money but slow loyalty. And I'm more interested in, you know, slow and steady wins the race, things that have got real meaning, real purpose, real utility, rather than just hype. And I think they hype brands. That's what I think ergonomics is about, is purely hype and faddish.
And Mike Abel, I'm going to need a quick answer to this as we come to the end of the conversation. You also suggest that this bubble might be bursting. Yet the virality of these brands that rely on ego are still driving billions. Is there real evidence that the model is failing?
Well, I think there are very few examples, Jeremy, that one can cite where you can say that thing was built on hype and it has managed to sustain itself. By the research I've done with a number of these brands that just took off, they all seem to be tanking to an extent. Their market share and their values and their sales have more than halved. So if you say, okay, we'll give you a different example, I could say maybe the Aloe yoga brand. Now, Aloe preceded the Kardashians. The Kardashians are the people that put it on steroids, much like an influencer would or a celebrity endorsement would. But Aloe, the product in and of itself, is a much better product than these brands that are just built off off hype. Same way as, you know, Roger Federer's investment in the sneaker brand, Takis, as we would say in South Africa, On is inherently a really good product. The fact that Roger has invested in it, people aren't buying Ons because of Roger Federer, but people are buying Kylie Jenner cosmetics because of Kylie Jenner. And so unless she stays in the headlines and unless she stays hot, the brand itself loses its relevance because the brand is reliant on the personality.
Mike Abel, Fascinating conversation. Thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate your time.
Hot Business is powered by Standard Bank Business and Commercial Banking.